there.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well.
Is that a voice changer?
Of course.
That's so cool. Welcome, Caleb.
Thank you.
Today I'm here with Bitcoin Baggins. He goes by BTC4FE on X, and he is a Bitcoin Army member, part of our community on X. And he's an ex-firefighter, also a recruiter for AI proof contract tech jobs.
That is the plan.
That's awesome. That's so cool. I don't know what kind of AI jobs you could recruit for. And that is very interesting to me because I love learning about AI and what people are doing with it these days. But we are here to talk about Bitcoin and your journey. Pretty much, you know, what kind of made you get into Bitcoin? When did you get into Bitcoin? You know, anything really you want to talk about? I just want to keep this like a free-flowing conversation.
Excellent. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. It's
a pleasure to be in the community because no one wants to talk about Bitcoin where I live.
It's like that for a lot of us. I feel like we don't have a ton of people in real life that understand it. So we found our community online that people actually understand us and we could talk to about it.
It is my therapy.
Oh, yes. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Community is very important.
Absolutely. The biggest thing I'm getting from that is that sense that I'm not crazy. I'm not a guy in a mask living in the wilderness, buying something that's not going to be worth anything.
Yes. So, yeah. You feel not so alone. And also, I love that you have this anonymous, you have this mask on. A lot of us in the Bitcoin world, we like to stay anonymous. It kind of reminds us a little bit of a Satoshi type feel, you know, because the creator of Bitcoin is anonymous and some of us like to stay that way. So I respect that. And I love your mask and your voice changer. It's very cool.
Thank you. It isn't my preference. Definitely, trust, then verify in my real life, my detriment sometimes. But at the end of the day, when you're holding the keys to your own financial future, you have to be serious about your offset.
That's why I like a lot of us in our in different communities. We have like a bunch of communities together. We have the Bitcoin Army. We have Smash by Saturdays. We have, you know, Zapsats, Satoshis. We have the my group is the Paranoid Bitcoin Anarchists. And I love that because it fits in with that whole we don't trust people. We want to stay, you know, a little bit skeptical. We like question things, you know, so having that mask on kind of fits in with the whole paranoid Bitcoin anarchist. And I feel like I like to explain that my group is called that because we all understand Bitcoin and it's nice that we found each other. But a lot of people that would know us in real life and know that we understand Bitcoin, they would kind of look at us like we're paranoid, even though we're actually just seeing the truth.
Yeah, I feel like we are extremely early still. The fact that we have all this bullish energy, all this, you know, crazy amount of positive headwind for Bitcoin adoption, hyper-Bitcoinization, dare I say it, and yet the price is flat, and then it tries to go, and then it drops down, and I get it. Bitcoin's price is the established in the margin, but it feels like suppression. Am I being paranoid here, or are you saying that too?
About price suppression, I like that we're talking a little bit about the paranoid stuff. I haven't talked too much about those things yet, so I'm enjoying this. I do feel like there's a bit of price suppression. I feel like Bitcoin is a little hard to suppress because it's such a big market, but I do feel like a lot of the leverage trading that is happening this cycle because of the Bitcoin stocks that are now like ETFs that are now available in the US stock market. It's kind of like this game of, it feels like these huge corporations and companies and governments are sort of almost walking through a minefield because I think everybody expects this supply to run out so quickly that the price will just skyrocket. So it almost feels to me like, you know, they're just trying to stack carefully. They're also, to me, it feels a little bit artificial when it comes to the bearishness. Like whenever you see the price drop lately in the markets, it feels like a lot of the people that are selling are not real bears or sellers, as we call them. They're actually kind of like real big money playing these games, that they're playing these trading games with these leverage trades that are like 10 times or higher. And it feels like they're almost just shorting Bitcoin when they see it go up, just so they can you know, make money off of those shorts and then turn around and buy Bitcoin again. So it kind of feels like they're just playing this cat and mouse game. Like we're making money just so we could buy it back. But they're also, I feel like they're trying to be careful because they know that the supply is, you know, limited. We really only have about 2 million Bitcoin on exchanges right now. I think a little over 2 million. And you know, with the strategic Bitcoin reserve looming for the US and them talking about accumulating 1 million Bitcoin for just their reserve alone, that would deplete half the supply that's remaining on exchanges. So I do feel like there's just this accumulation slash like they don't want the price to skyrocket because then they have to purchase it at higher prices too. So I feel like they're just real big money is trying to play right now, but it seems like they can only hold it down for so long. Eventually, I think people will get caught off sides and they will have to buy at these higher prices. And I think a lot of them maybe that are traders don't realize that they're playing with a finite asset. So eventually, I think people will get burned and then they'll just have to accumulate wherever they can. What's your paranoia about this?
Well, I come by it honestly. I started in 2017. I had heard Bitcoin a couple times previously, but was not able to mine or buy it from Mt.Gox. So I got in on the 2017 runoff. Then I just bought all the way up. I thought, wow, score the win. And, you know, dumped my life saving. And then about a year and a half later, the exchange rug pull lost everything.
Which exchange was it?
Quadriga CF in Vancouver, British Columbia. Mm-hmm. They at the time were the largest exchange in Canada. They were $250 million range when they imploded.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out I was using deposits to play the market, buy jets, you know, of parties. So when the market turned, he was done. Mm-hmm. So he went to India with his wife, and he died with the laptop, with all the private keys of irritable bowel syndrome. The founder, with all the keys, he goes to the province where they are known for faking deaths. He dies of irritable bowel syndrome.
Interesting.
No one will touch the corpse. His wife takes the corpse back to the hotel with a taxi. They proceed to have a party. He is then cremated and buried in Nova Scotia. All money gone.
So, yes, we don't believe that, do we?
The Bitcoin.
Yes. Like, that is one of those stories where you think there's something fishy going on. Obviously, he took off with all the money from the exchange. And just to clarify for people who don't understand Bitcoin, that does not mean that Bitcoin was stolen directly from people. It doesn't mean that Bitcoin ever got hacked. That means that people that purchase Bitcoin from an exchange, not your keys, not your coins. So if you purchase Bitcoin off of an exchange, we say that, you know, you need to move that Bitcoin off of the exchange and self-custody the Bitcoin. So you have to either have a hardware wallet. That is a terrible lesson to have learned. It's kind of like right now is a good time to buy, you understand the value of it, you actually care about securing it properly so that it's yours and not some exchange where some guy can fake his death and run off with the Bitcoin, you know, really, because that is just the type of greed that happens when you trust somebody. What happened after that?
I did some soul searching. I haven't told my wife, still, that I lost our entire life savings. Thank Saint Satoshi. The price was bumping for 5K Canadian. So that was like 3K US. And I said, has anything changed? Mm-hmm. That's my underlying the understanding of Bitcoin. Has anything changed? Value drop. Nothing. Holy crap. Everything. Sold it all. Pulled everything I could. Full coiner. Got back in. And then just like, you know. And now, as my friend said, I'm semi-retarded. Here I am, right?
Yeah.
You look behind me. I have my pirate sword.
That's awesome.
My little flask of flowers. Am I rich? How do I tell? I don't have to work. Do I work? Absolutely. Do I work every day? Yes. Do I spend time with my kids? Yes. Do I bake sourdough bread? Yes. So, I try to live the life now, but at the same time, you have this pressure from society saying, Lambo, clothes, bling, plastic surgery, whatever. So, I think I'm a representative of the transition between the garbage and Bitcoin standard. Then, here's my little, what do you want to call it? Thing where I want kudos. I just finally, put all my payments through Bitcoin.
What do you use for that?
I'm currently using ShakePay and Theta because gold is not Canadian allowed. Yeah. So, likely gonna get a second address banked out in the state and then get a full card as well.
And you obviously self-custody now.
Absolutely.
Yep. So that is incredible.
Self-defense.
Just society, you see it everywhere, like you said, like people think they have this false conception of what it means to be wealthy, and they think it's showing off the things you have and the things you buy and keeping up with the Benjamins and all that stuff, you know. And I'm lucky enough to be married to a man who doesn't care about that stuff. He is not a jealous person. He doesn't care about what people have. We always teach our kids that, you know, you don't have to brag about things that you own. You should always be happy for people for whatever they have. But what real value is your family, your health. And yes, if you could save for your future so that you don't have to work till you're 75. And if you don't have to leave your kids with nothing, if you can leave them with something that's growing over time, that's what's important, to have the work that you put in mean something one day. And that's what Bitcoin is. It's not the short-term price fluctuations. It's the long-term savings and making sure you're storing it securely. But yeah, I'm very excited to hear you mention that, because people have the wrong idea in society about what's important.
My origin was from rug pull, 1.5 Bitcoin, 5 Bitcoin Cash, 6 Ethereum, proof bond. They did bankruptcy. 5 years later, I got $1,200 back. I immediately buy it into Bitcoin. So I am going to keep that UTXO forever. But the rest of it, Bitcoin is money. It has a value as a medium of exchange, right, as a unifier of productivity across that entire globe. And when you look at $900 trillion being absorbed into 16 million-ish bitcoins, you're going to see a lot of volatility. And that volatility is your opportunity to buy what you can afford every single day. Dollar cost average. And then chill. That's it. There's nothing else. And every day, I get the DMs. Hey, beautiful girl. What are you trading? I'm like, bro, dude, I don't trade. I buy and hold. And then, if life happens, I'm going to spend a few cents and I'm going to fix the problem. Or I'm going to invest in, like right now, a fifth wheel for my entire family to go on the road for a whole year. Homeschooling, organic food, regenerative farms, parks, seeing real people. That's where it's at. I'm going to die. We're all going to die. And what is the point of all of this gripping if I never enjoy it? So, yeah, 80-20. 80% stays. 20% is going to be used in and out. And the higher it goes, the more fun I get to have.
Yeah, and that's what Bitcoin teaches you. It's like, you know, you save, you know, and you can have something to pass on to your kids, and it builds this generational wealth that one day when your kids grow up, they can actually think about having a family.
And this, you know, is really important. Many people don't understand that once you do the work, proof of work, you put your $100 in, read the Bitcoin standard. If you can't read, you listen to it. You'll get it. The light bulb goes on. Like, holy crap. I have to get all the Bitcoin I possibly can. How come Satoshi used the 1-256 SHA algorithm that the NSA doesn't have a backdoor? Why that one? How did he know? That guy is next level. I've seen guys think, oh, I'll just rip this port apart. I'll go in there, I'll find something, do something. You know, 3 weeks later, cigarette butts, coffees, and they're just like, every spot, every place where they go in the code to try and break it, he's already there. It's like, fine.
He was so smart because he knew that, you know, nobody would really care about it when it was not worth much. And because of the way that the supply is released, such a large amount came out initially and the scarcity grew. It's growing exponentially. So that initial growth, it's like that whole folding a piece of paper thing that Jeff Booth talks about. I think it takes 42 folds to get to the moon, and that's unfathomable. You can't, you can't even like really comprehend that. How does that make any sense? But it's true. So those initial folds don't make a difference until you get to the bigger folds, then it starts reaching the moon. So initially Satoshi knew that exponential growth. Yep. See?
One.
Yep.
Two, three.
Yeah. So those early four, folds, they don't do, yeah. Five.
Six.
Yes.
But man, there's seven.
Yeah. Seven, maybe. That's as much as you could fold it. I thank you for visualizing that for us. And see, seven folds it takes, and it's still only this big. And if you could fold that piece of paper over and over again, it would reach the moon if you did it 42 times. So that's just what exponential growth is. And Satoshi, to understand that and release his supply the way that he chose to do so, by the time people even realized how big it had gotten, the network was so large already that even if somebody tried to hack the network, it was too big to convince 51% of the computers on the whole global network to change it. So it early on, it was even too hard to attack, let alone now. So I love that they say it's more profitable for an attacker to just mine Bitcoin than to try to attack Bitcoin, because it's too astronomically expensive to try to do so. The network is so humongous. For Satoshi to know that early on, to know to use that SHA-256, you know, I didn't realize that that was the reason, because no other government or anybody can have access to that and have a backdoor to it. I didn't really know that. So that is very interesting. And just the fact that he knew from day one, you know, in this age of technology and how everyone knows everything about everybody online, you know, there's IP addresses. Satoshi knew to hide his IP address from the moment he uttered a word about Bitcoin onto the forums he was talking with through email. And it was like he just understood what this could become when it was something that nobody even thought of. Even when he released his white paper, I think people ignored it early on. They were just thinking, oh, here's another person trying and it's probably not going to work. And then it wasn't until Hal Finney decided to give it a go, and he was like, this is working, you know, let's get people using this. And it took some time for it to build up a little steam. But isn't that crazy? That's like, it amazes us. Whoever this person is was so forward thinking, was so sick of the games that the government plays, these boom and bust cycles that destroy people's livelihoods, the bailout of the banks and the corporations, and just knowing how, you know, money in the world is destroyed. It is so incredible. Like, we look at him because it's like, how is this person human? There's so many people out there that have no clue. And this is like, how do you not know this? This is the greatest story ever. And it's real. It's not some made up story. This is such an, like, we are living through this, and this happened.
I'm going to read a little quote, don't mind.
Yeah.
I don't believe we shall ever have a good mining again. Before we tweak the thing out of the hands of the government, that is, we don't tweak it violently out of the hands of government. All we can do is, by some sly, roundabout way, introduce something they had thought. Because this is the part that's so, you know, any part of Bitcoin you can go, you can disappear the rest of your life on any aspect. But the fact that when true bunnies come together, the other one always wins. Always. These dolls used to be able to be traded with gold. That there was an exchange rate. Seashells with gold. Mm-hmm. By buying gold today with seashells. Not happening. There is currently an exchange rate between made up virtual government controlled and surveilled fake money, US dollars, greenbacks, euros, whatever, and Bitcoin. And this is like, this is the part I don't prep. Why aren't more people doing the trade, buying Bitcoin now? It's amazing.
It is. I think it's just, I think a lot of it in the rest of the world, people are seeing it more and more as their currency is being devalued. They're understanding that they need this way out. But I feel like in the US and Canada, I'm sure it has a lot to do in our, where we live, because of misinformation. And I like to, not that I like to think this, but I do think this. It's because, you know, when, like, nobody in mainstream news just mentions Bitcoin or talks about Bitcoin, like in legacy media. But what they do, what they were mentioning a lot about is FTX. Like, when FTX collapsed, I remember, like, everyone at my job where I work, they know that I've been into Bitcoin. They know that I love it, talk about it a lot. And when FTX happened, everyone's like, oh, Stacy, you know about that Bitcoin stuff. Do you hear what happened with FTX? And that guy is, you know, that's crazy. Like, they're just associating what happened with that exchange with Bitcoin being a scammy thing or some scammer or some kind of scammy exchange. And even what happened with your exchange back in the day where that guy took off with the money, they don't explain in the news that, hey, if you had your Bitcoin in self-custody, it would have been fine. But because they don't tell people that, they just say, oh, look, all this money was stolen and people lost a lot of money. So people, because of this, like the spread of information these days too, when they hear about something huge like that happening, like nobody really understood Bitcoin before that. And the first thing they hear about Bitcoin in media is how FTX happened. And, oh, I'm staying away from that stuff because it's scary. So I think that it's on purpose so that people, regular people, that, you know, their currency is getting debased, but not at the rate of maybe some other countries. They scare you. They fearmonger you. They freak you out. They want you to not look at Bitcoin so that they can look at Bitcoin and accumulate when they want to. And I think they do it on purpose to just keep us away or keep most people away as much as they can. You know, so most people's mindset, they don't know much about Bitcoin, but they heard about FTX. So it's like that was in people's faces, you know, when it happened. But then it's not all this other stuff in people's faces about how great Bitcoin is or what it's doing. It's like, no, why would you say that on legacy media? You know, you wouldn't talk about that. Just scare people away from it. So I think
you're right on that in terms of using all the levers to keep this thing down. Mm-hmm. That's the way I look at it. We're sitting in a rocket on the launch pad, fully fueled, piled with dynamite, and there's like kindling and matches and everything around. And whoever makes the mistake and makes the spark, it's going.
Yeah.
And I think that Sachs, David Sachs, he gets it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think these people were advising Trump, they understand. Will this, I think, gets it. And so, where's Michael? Trump. But Merhadam, the entertainer, the old businessman, next president. If all he does is gets a strategic Bitcoin reserve law, not an executive order, but a law, with, he's essentially wheeling the Trojan horse right into Washington. And here's the funny thing. He's playing the drain, the swap, by accident, while him collecting all the money he can, that he loves to do. But because Bitcoin has been inserted, it's the harder money. It's the better money. It will take over. And yes, he will destroy the national debt. It'll go down. Then the living will go up. People will thrive. And Trump can take credit. But at the end of the day, it's going to enforce honesty, proof of work, reliability, consistency, all the things that we don't have in government. Thank you, Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think that this is definitely going to be a catalyst. It's going to be like throwing the matches onto the, you know, like you said, like onto all the, like the rocket ship's going to take off, because like they're all trying to play these, you know, walking through a minefield or trying to throw water on top of all those, you know, bombs that are at the bottom. You know, it's like they're trying to stop it from happening, but it will happen. And as soon as somebody takes that next step or actually like, you know, throws a spark into that fire, it's gonna take off. And it's interesting because the rest of the world, like, you know, when I heard about this Olu from Nigeria, he's amazing to hear. It's like, it's not just his country, it's many other countries where they're not just sitting here waiting to see what Donald Trump is going to do. They're already doing it because they have to. They don't have a choice with their currency. It's getting so devalued that there's no option for them, and they've already found the way out. But I think that the funny thing is another manipulative type of thing that happened when we talk about this paranoia, though, about price suppression and stuff and how to get American people to kind of stay away from Bitcoin out of fear, is that people majority of people that don't understand Bitcoin, they lump it together with crypto and they just think it is the same as other crypto when it isn't. And what I think is an interesting play to kind of, because Trump does want to do this, he wants to make this happen. He wants to, like, you know, he's got a big ego too. He wants to brag about it and say, oh, look how I saved, you know, the national debt and I saved, you know, the America, you know. But I also think that it's also a strategy when he came out with that Trump coin, because it was like right before he became president, he's like, I'm coming out with this Trump coin and everyone that loves me or hates me, whatever, they're going to hear about it. And the people that love me are probably going to buy it. And then they're going to lose a lot of money because people are going to think, oh, this is the next Trump is going to be president. He loves crypto. So a lot of people bought it. They lost money. And then it loses trust with people in this cryptocurrency space. So people look at Bitcoin again in another time besides FTX. They think, oh, we love Trump, but that crypto stuff, I don't know about it. Like, I lost money already. So they're not going to go buy a more expensive crypto like Bitcoin, even though it has the largest global network. It's massive. It's not just some crypto. It can't be rug pulled or hacked, but people associate it with every other crypto. So I think it's another way to keep American people from buying up supply when the governments of the world want to do it. You know, and Americans are thought to be more well off than other countries. So they're like, why would we tell Americans to all go buy it? Then that's really going to set it off. That's really going to cause that rocket ship to go to the moon. So it's like, let's have more scare tactics for them. Let's make them think that Bitcoin is just like Trump coin and, you know, all that stuff. So all this money eventually goes to Bitcoin regardless over time, even though Tether is being used around the world because it's necessary right now, because the dollar isn't going to just die overnight. It's going to take some time. But in the process, it's going to need to be used for this world to transition into this Bitcoin standard. And he even said that the CEO of Tether said that he knows that Tether is temporary. The CEO has said that this is just for now until everything eventually gets into Bitcoin. But we just need a medium in between to switch that dollar world, fiat world, into a Bitcoin world. But like, that's going to be that transition. It's like, what's going to be used to switch everything? So even if the CEO says that, it's like, he knows that Tether is going to be the ultimate. It's not going to win over Bitcoin. Nothing can. And even he knows it.
Absolutely. The thing I love is Vitalik, the founder, co-founder of Ethereum. Mm-hmm. He never buys Ethereum. He only sells it. Mm-hmm. XRP, what's his name? Garlic Breath. XRP founder. He never buys it. He only sells it.
Oh, I think we froze a little bit. Hold on 1 second. Okay, I'm going to wait a second. Let me know when you're back. I don't know if you're frozen on your end. Hey.
Just hang on there.
Okay, yeah. You got to get your...
Yeah, I know.
So once you're all set up, where we left off was you were talking about how they don't buy any of theirs. They just sell it.
Mm-hmm. Not sure what the heck that was, but it was like a full Windows, just full
computer. Oh, really?
Just the whole thing. I don't know. Might have been like a forced update or something. I don't know. Great to chat, by the way.
I know. It's awesome. I love it.
And I want to join more spaces, but man, with three kids, I work for myself. And it's like, not happening.
Yeah, no, it'd be great. It's like, that's how I feel too. A lot of times with my kids, but my kids aren't that young. I have like a 13, 11, and a 9-year-old. So like, I could always go upstairs and they're, as long as they're not like super loud or something, I can go do it. But when they're younger, it's hard. But usually like after they go to sleep or if they're in school, like I'd like to do more spaces during the day when I'm off of work. But yeah, you know.
I've got twins at 11 and then a 14-year-old.
You should speak in spaces if you find a chance. If you can get away from them when you're not working,
yeah,
for even a little bit. I mean, it's like people would love to hear from you too, and love to hear some of the paranoia that's going on.
Well, and it, you know, as somebody said, if you're not paranoid, you're not paying attention,
right?
You know, like mm-hmm. seriously, like you got to be on this stuff. And when it comes to, you know, when it comes to OPSEC, like you, like security is significant, like. You know, I have a friend who's a gold bug, right? And he's like, oh, yeah, I just came back from my dad's place with 12 kilos of gold. I'm like, dude, you should never have told me that you have $1 million worth of gold at your house. like your craziness. I hope you were going to a vault at a bank or somewhere, but then it's like not your keys, not your gold. Like,
right. Yeah, that's so crazy. That's so stupid.
And it's like, I love this guy. I've known him my whole life, and I'm not going to go and, you know, knife him and get his gold. But like, if I slip up or what, you know?
Yeah, like you don't want to tell somebody and then they go do it, you know?
Totally. Yeah, crazy. It's bizarre. So, you know, so that's really where I've been sitting a lot in terms of, you know, in terms of Bitcoin, the Bitcoin space. You know, I used to have a different account and I was much more open and just like, la, 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 Bitcoin is great. It's going to change the world. And then I was, and, you know, I don't know if you follow Jameson Law.
No.
He's kind of a terrifying dude.
Really?
He's been in the space for a long time and he really knows his stuff. And he just throws out these like threat reports, basically like, oh yes, today this many people were home invaded and beaten until they gave up their kind of stuff. And it's just like, wow, okay, I have kids. I don't want to deal with it. And I'm in Canada. We're all about the long guns, you know. So, but it's like, that's in a case, in a room, in a place. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to go run over there and, somebody's coming in the back door.
It's really true. I mean, you never know. And that's why it was like hard for me to think about doing this, you know, showing my face and saying my real name. But then at the same time, people who have spoken about Bitcoin, I'm like, a lot of these people are doing it. And I understand I'm paranoid very much. But at the same time, if it's not for people that speak up and write books about it and talk about it, then it wouldn't get decentralized. It would be just up to the governments to control it and hold it and have the most supply. But for people to understand and to spread the word about it, for more people to just get it, it needs people to do the things that they're doing. So I'm like, that's why if they could do it, I guess I could do it, you know? Yeah. So if people understand that, unless you beat someone to death and they give up their key. What if they have multiple wallets and they give you one of their keys with some of it, but they don't, you know what I mean? How do you even know what anybody has? What if they don't have much, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to go kill somebody over, you know?
You know, but because the kings of fiat are still in charge, they're still keeping the terror stuff going. They're keeping everyone scared. They're keeping everyone down. Mm-hmm. You know, they're suppressing all these different aspects.
Well, that's another reason why I don't like when people post about how much Bitcoin they're buying.
Dude.
I don't like that. Like, I love Smash by Saturdays, but I think if you're going to message him separately to tell him just to add it to the totals, but I don't feel like I'd like to, like when people say, oh, I got to a whole coin or this or that, it's like, I wouldn't tell people what you're buying.
No, and that's where I'm saying like DCA, right? Every day, buy a little bit every day.
Yeah.
It's boring. It's not, you know, no one cares. It's not like a woo-woo thing. And then one day you'll wake up and you're like, holy crap, I'm a whole coiner. Anyway, voice mod is not wanting to restart for some unknown reason. Oh. All right, so we're back. And I've doxed my voice now since my, as my friend said, the simulation did not want me to have my voice mask today. So it isn't anymore. Welcome to Life with Tech. The beautiful thing about Bitcoin is that the tech stack, the background of Bitcoin is so incredibly elegant and simple and powerful that it does what the Fed is supposed to do. It creates a bedrock, a foundation that we can of trust. The entire system is audited every 10 minutes publicly. Mm-hmm. I run a node, I run miners, I participate in the network, I hold Bitcoin. I want to know that all that stuff is real, and it is real. And that trust layer at the bottom, then we can build on top. And everyone's like, oh, Bitcoin doesn't scale. You can't buy a coffee with a Bitcoin. Bull crap. I have it right here on my phone. I can show you the QR. Oh, you know what? That would be funny. That would be super funny. Do you have a Lightning phone or Lightning app?
Yeah.
That's going to be hilarious. I want to see if this will work. So here, for anybody watching, let's see if this will work.
Mm-hmm.
This is that's my QR code. Let's see if we can get a transaction to go through. I'll send it back if you want, but this is
let's do it.
So this is Lightning, everybody. This is a second layer on top of Bitcoin, secured by Bitcoin, and it will allow you to buy a coffee, to buy a sandwich, to buy whatever you want on the Bitcoin network. Cancel. Whoa, look at that. Look at that. 10 sats just showed up. How long did that take? So
seconds.
And people like, oh, Bitcoin can't scale, man. Bitcoin's so slow, bro. My guy, this crushes, absolutely crushes MasterCard, Visa, Amex, the NSA, and all the supercomputers in the world in terms of security. And transactions are essentially unlimited. It's built on a foundation of trust. 10 sats, which is currently worth what? 2 cents, 5 cents, 6 cents. Thank you. That transaction in 10 years is going to be $100.
Right.
Thank you for the $100.
Yeah, for sure. Seriously. No, it's so true.
My first Bitcoin gig. Woo.
Yeah.
So
treasure those sats.
I will. That's a serious thing. So, you know, we look at, you mentioned the Africa Garlic House. He never buys XRP because XRP is a shitcoin. No one can print more Bitcoin. Sorry, I get a bit cranky and passionate about this stuff. But
no, it's true.
Africa is blowing up right now. You had a guest on, amazing. You know, they have to do this. They have to. Their currencies have failed.
Yeah.
Their remittance. They were paying 40% of a check of money they made in the UK or wherever.
Nice.
40% to the thieves to send the money back to buy a chicken or some rice. Now they can send the whole thing on Lightning for 2 cents, and it's there in 2 seconds.
Right.
And this is, like, again, thank you, Michael Saylor, for doing such a great job explaining it. Let's talk more about him because I'm super paranoid. But he explains that the unit bias, the fact that Bitcoin costs $86,000, freaks people out. But no, you can divide. And as soon as we get to the point where one sat, one Satoshi is a Bitcoin, we don't send $1 billion to our friend, we send $1, right? So that's where we're going. And we have to break that chain apart. We have to break the Bitcoin monolith, the 16 million thing. We could run the whole network off one Bitcoin. We don't need 16 million.
And the reason you say 16... The reason you say 16 million is because of the lost coins over the years.
You heard the guy in Wales, he's a Welsh guy, early Bitcoiner, mined them on his own computer. His computer that his wife threw in the landfill is worth $400 million.
I did hear about that. Somebody mentioned it to me recently, and they were saying that he's thinking about hiring people to go dig through the landfill to try to find his laptop.
He's formed a company to buy the landfill and literally forensically excavate the landfill to find the laptop. That's at 86,000. When we're at 10 million per coin, and everyone's like, 10 million per coin, that's crazy talk. No, it is not. It is not, because is Bitcoin going to zero? Is it going to zero? No.
Nope.
If it's not going to zero, it's going up forever, Laura.
Yes.
Or Stacy in this case. But you know what I mean? It's going up forever.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to absorb the monetary premium of real estate, precious metals, all fiat currencies, anything that people want to hold their value, which is what? Just our time transferred into a handy thing we could trade around with each other. It's like an IOU. I did a bunch of things in the past, proof of work. I have some Bitcoin, proof of work. Now I can get something in the future, proof of the work that I did before. So it's just time. We're talking about Bitcoin is just organizing people's time across 8 billion people perfectly, audited every 10 minutes.
So, and because it's audited every 10 minutes and it gets scarcer as time goes on, it's this black hole absorbing all of this other fake stuff that doesn't have security and doesn't have scarcity.
So one thing I want to push back on just a little bit is this concept of supply shock. Somebody pointed out this the other day that I thought was really interesting. People are like, oh, supply shock incoming. There's only so many Bitcoins on the exchange. It's the same as oil. Or we're going to run out of oil. No, we're going to run out of oil at the price we're currently paying for oil. If you double the price of oil, the supply of oil will explode. It'll go 10x, 100x, 1000x. We can run the entire global economy on one Bitcoin. So because it's divisible, fungible, divisible, you can take it apart, put it back together. So the supply shock thing is a little bit of a red herring. I love the way it sounds, and as a, you know, pump my bag guy, it makes me feel happy. But I think there will always be sellers, and there will always be buyers. So there will always be supply on the exchange. We can check in on this in 5 years.
I agree with you.
And I'll bet you there'll still be a couple million on the exchange, even though they're worth 3, 4, 5 million each.
You will have people always selling. And that's why I call it a redistribution of wealth. Like that's like from the very beginning, when people talk about supply shock, Bitcoin levels the playing field. There will always be new buyers. There'll always be new sellers, but eventually the money from the early buyers of Bitcoin that will sell back into the markets, it's going to spread out, you know, so it's going to spread out through 8 billion people. It's not going to just be the people now that have it are going to hold it forever and never do anything with it. It's going to be split in many, many pieces throughout the entire world.
The big and, let's be real clear here. There's the 1% phenomenon is an emergent, it's an emergent phenomenon of groups of people transacting. I've seen this over and over and over, and in fact, there's scientific papers, we can dig them up, but I'm not going to, that show that in any group of nodes, if you have a bunch of nodes and you distribute wealth equally amongst them, within a very short time, a very small number of nodes will have most of the wealth. And it's weird. And it's not like, it doesn't make Elon evil. It just sort of just happened, quote unquote, besides the fact that he works any 10 or 100 of us under the table while he's chewing gum and going directly.
Yeah.
Like he's a machine. But the fact is, there are always going to be 1%ers, always.
Yeah.
In the Bitcoin system, we don't even, like, people like, oh, Elon, he's the richest man in the world. I'm pretty sure the Rothschild family, who owns, get this clearly, owns 156 central banks. They own the freaking bank that prints the freaking money for the freaking country. I'm pretty sure those dudes are the richest, or richer than Elon by 10,000%.
Right.
So there's always going to be 1%. There's always going to be Illuminati. There's always going to be all this business. However, what Bitcoin does and does very well is it creates this condition where when you send those Satoshi to me, when I take those Satoshi and send them to the next person, I am sending the actual thing. It's a, what do they call it? A bearer bond. It's a certificate of authenticity that I'm sending from me to you finally with finality and irrevocability and provability. And that right there is so revolutionary to society. It's going to change everything.
Right.
And here's my thought on the, you said before about that the US is kind of suppressing and fighting on Bitcoin to slow its adoption. However, Jason Lowery, software, you should get him on if you can.
Yes. Right? I tried messaging him. I didn't hear back yet, but I'm hoping.
You have to talk to his people. So
yes,
you know, so he's, and him and a lot of other people are like, look, kid, friend, look, US holds 50 ish percent of the Bitcoin supply in the United States. Now, you know, we're here, I'm North America, you know, we're close, right? So Canadians hold a bunch, Europeans, blah, blah, blah. But there's a massive chunk of Bitcoin right in the United States already. Mm-hmm. So why not do the full switch, hardcore? And I don't know if Trump's the guy to do it, maybe, and just go full send. Hey guys, you know, you Iran, Brazil, China, India, you got your things, you think you're so cool trading using gold to back up your trades. You know what? We're selling our gold and we're buying all the Bitcoin.
That's what I think. I would do it.
Have a fun day being poor, because we're winning.
And your poor friend, sadly.
You know, like, seriously, why wouldn't you?
Now, yeah.
We could go right down to all the different rabbit holes. Is Fort Knox empty, blah, blah, blah. But even just by revaluing, because when they confiscated at $40 an ounce, and it's now $3,000 an ounce. That's like $1 trillion of valuation they can just dump into the marketplace.
Right.
And buy Bitcoin. Now, here's my tinfoil hat of the day. Michael Saylor, Michael Saylor is the U.S. Bitcoin strategic reserve.
I think that too.
He is already there. He's already doing it. He's doing it in front of everybody.
Right.
He's doing it predictably, publicly, with massive la 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 la. Join me, join me, join me. Get on my train, buy my stuff. It's going to go up forever. But here's what I think. He's a single guy. He's altruistic. He's an engineer. And I think more and more people want to be remembered throughout history,
right,
for the rest of time, as the guy, the great white man who saved the USA. So if he can ascertain and create security algorithmically that his engineering mind can trust, I believe he will transfer a massive amount of the strategy's holdings to an entity which will become the de facto SDR for the, you know, that's my tinfoil hat theory of the day. What do you think?
I have definitely, I'm on the same track with you on that. I do feel like what he wants to do is he wants to be a Bitcoin bank. You know, he wants it to be the new bank of the future, like old banks gone kind of thing. Even with soft war, you know, with Jason Lowry. And I think how when he says that the U.S. needs to be mining, and when the U.S. government wants in on something, sometimes instead of building it themselves, they'll just buy stock in those companies. So they'll say, oh, well, we own this much percent of MARA mining. But all these mining companies that are already in the U.S., U.S. will then support them and fund them so that they can grow bigger and bigger. And they will then own part of those stocks for those companies. And I think the same thing with Strategy. I think that the government, even if they're not going to outright buy Strategy, or if he won't give it directly to the government will own huge stock in the company. And maybe then they will be buying Saylor's convertible bonds in order to buy more. So they'll own more stock in the company, and Saylor will be able to then collect more Bitcoin. So I think they may do it through Saylor, knowing that they have huge exposure to Strategy. And then I do wonder, like, I know he wants to leave his legacy. He greatly admires Satoshi, and I think that he wants to be somebody like, you know, hey, Saylor was like a big, people listened to me a lot. They understood Bitcoin because of me. And, you know, Satoshi came out with it. I helped spread the word. I created the Bitcoin bank because I understood it. And I think he wants to be remembered that way. You know, but I think that it could be a Bitcoin bank for the US or the world. I'm not sure how that would work, but
I like it. And yeah. And what we haven't talked about here is 51% of tax. And so for anyone who's coming to the Bitcoin space, is a little bit new to this, a 51% of tax says that if you control 51% of the hash rate of the computers that are securing the network of Bitcoin, then you can create a fake transaction and say that, oh, the million Bitcoins from Satoshi were just transferred to this new wallet.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can force the network, because you control the majority of the hash power, you can force the network to treat that as the real, you know, the real blockchain, then it goes forward from there. Now, it can be rolled back. There's ways of dealing with it. And, you know, so don't get too caught up in it. But I think there's a lot to be thought about in terms of centralization of mining, centralization of Bitcoin ownership, centralization, like Larry Fink and his, they don't care about Bitcoin. They don't have any, like, they're like bloodless ghouls. They don't care about anything. They care about winning.
Yeah.
And they will win using whatever tool they have. They don't care. They don't have that, like, I believe in Bitcoin thing in their heart.
Right.
So they'll trade it. They'll short it. They'll FUD it. They'll screw it. They'll dump it. They'll do everything, anything to get ahead.
Now,
here's a little one, a nugget for all you folks who haven't bought Bitcoin yet. If you are invested in anything that that BlackRock touches, BlackRock just put 2% of it bought its own dog food. It bought IBIT. 2% allocation into its basket of magical things that go out. So everybody who's in BlackRock is now exposed to Bitcoin through IBIT. And cool. I don't know if it's happened yet, but IBIT is apparently going to go to full redemption.
So I heard about that.
Yeah. So if you hold IBIT and you want to back out of it and get an actual Bitcoin, you will get actual Bitcoin out, which is
great.
Which is super cool. Because
now
I see it as like a kind of a, like Trump bought $990 million worth of wrapped Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And the market said, blah, nothing. Big meh, right? But all he has to do is go switch, and now he's got $95 million worth of actual Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of deals and a lot of stuff going on in the background.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that we aren't really talking about a lot in the space is the impact of scarcity. Mm-hmm. People don't get it. They have never, ever, ever, no human has ever experienced true scarcity in terms of an asset, never. And so, you know, we look at gold. Oh, gold, it's going up. It's great. Peter Schiff is happy. Peter Schiff's you can bookmark this. Peter Schiff is a Bitcoiner.
Yeah.
He's totally a Bitcoiner, and he's just going for likes. That's all he's doing.
That's what I think, yeah.
He's got a whole bunch put away somewhere, and he just, you know, whatever. So
he's an engagement farmer.
Totally. And a good one. And up there somewhere, I don't know where it is exactly, Enceladus, somewhere out by one of the planets, there's an asteroid. It's got enough gold on it. It's basically solid gold. It's enough gold on that one asteroid to make every human being on Earth a trillionaire at current price. NASA has a mission to go to the asteroid. Why would they go there? And what are they planning to do there? Who knows? Mm-hmm. But the point is, gold is 100% infinitely accessible. There's tons.
Right.
As much as you want. Bitcoin is finite.
Right.
And as this finite, you know, we have this infinite pyramid coming down of infinite demand to a pyramid sticking up of finite. And the only thing that can change is price. So the fact that we're able to buy Bitcoin right now at 85,000 or 86 or whatever it is today is a gift. It's seriously a gift, people, because no one's going to care in 10 years if you bought it at 85 or 95 or 105. You'll just be a freaking legend before 98% of the human race.
Right. That's exactly true.
And interestingly enough, because there's so much old school fiat mindset in the market, and because the market is set, it's just a fear and greed indicator. That's all. So because it's being set in real time every 10 minutes by real people globally, there's going to be whales, what we would consider whales, people who hold thousands of Bitcoin. Boom, it just hit my magic money. They probably put a stop loss or, you know, a stop or a sell order in long ago.
Yeah.
When it hits 500K, I'm selling it all, transferring it to yen or whatever, and I'm going to live my life. They're morons.
And those might be the people that are doing it that want to live this crazy life and spend their money because maybe they don't have kids and they just want to, what are they going to do with it if they don't spend it all?
Exactly. And all I'm saying about that is that there's going to be folks like us who are dripping a few sats, to get lifestyle. And then there's going to be people who I think are mentally handicapped who are going to sell their entire stack at a certain price.
Right. Period.
Yes, they will have to buy back in at some point and different, but they actually don't even care. They just think fiat and they can't unthink it. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. That's going to make these, we're going to see this like up, big drops and then up, and because people are dumping on the market at a certain price. So we're not, you know, I love, you know, Samson Mao and, you know, Excellion. He's like, it's going to go God candle, 100K per day. Wow. You know, I hear him. It will one day. And I'm there for that. I want to see it. But ultimately, like, I'm much more about the 45.
Right.
I see that 45 over time forever.
To continue to DCA, we have to continue to stay paranoid. We just have to continue being convicted because we know.
Let's not be convicted because that would be bad.
No, that's true. Yeah.
Conviction.
Thank you. So,
I say, I salute you.
Thank you.
Let's go Bitcoin to the moon. We're going to do this together. We're stronger. Thank you so much for having me. One small detail. There's a 90-year-old cleric in Saudi Arabia. Might have heard of it. Might not. He just issued a fatwa that says Bitcoin is halal. This may mean nothing to you, but or to anybody listening.
I do know.
Who cares? That's 2 billion people who get down on their knees and bow to Mecca every day, and they just said it's okay to own Bitcoin because it's not riba. It's not against our religion.
Right.
Holy crap.
That is going to be the fuse, maybe. That's the thing.
I hope. We have a rocket ship on a landing pad, covered with dynamite, ready to go. Let's go.
Yes. Thank you. Boom. Thank you so much. I love that visual. Thank you. Yes. Oh, there we go. There we go. Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you. It was so nice talking to you. I can't wait. You got to get on some spaces, too, when you get a chance.
One of these days. We're getting on, like I say, we're going on the road. We're taking the family on a gap year. Thank you, Bitcoin. Thank you, Satoshi. And I love what you were saying about Saylor. He's a disciple. He is. Mm-hmm. He wants to be John or Paul or Michael. Wait a minute. Was there a disciple?
Yes, anyway? An archangel.
An angel, Michael. Exactly. Bringer of light, right? I think it's something like that.
I think so.
You know, and I'm getting it now. He wants to be that guy. And here's the cool thing about a huge point. Any of these are a dissertation, a PhD, whatever. Huge point. I used to give money to charity. I'd have like, I support these guys. I don't do any of that anymore. I only buy Bitcoin and I hold it because every time I hold that Bitcoin in my private offline,
mm-hmm.
cold storage, I help my friends in Africa and I help the charities who understand Bitcoin and are buying it because their bags go up and they have mm-hmm. more money to share with other people. So,
that's cool. So true. I love that.
Woo.
Yes.
Take care.
Thank you. This community is the best. Thank you awesome. So much for joining me today. And I will be seeing you soon on X, and I will be linking your profile below in the video. I can't wait to post this.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you.
Stay humble.
Take care. Yep. Mm-hmm. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.